This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpoga, and here's what's coming up.
The family and broadly us in the movement find it as 10 steps back.
That's LGBTQ activist Linda Bowman on a Namibia Supreme Court decision that will effectively deny citizenship to a child born through surrogacy to a same-sex couple. Also, Ghana says illegal weapons are being smuggled in from Burkina Faso. Mozambique fears the death toll from cholera after Cyclone Freddy will continue to jump. And French medical group Doctors Without Borders has launched the first HPV vaccination drive for schoolgirls in Malawi. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Ethiopia's government has rejected the U.S. assertion that all sides in the two-year Tigray war committed war crimes, calling the statement inflammatory. Maya Miskel reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Monday on Twitter that the Ethiopian and Eritrean armies, Amhara region forces, and Tigray People's Liberation Front forces all committed atrocity crimes during the Tigray War that ended in November. Blinken said he condemns these atrocities and welcomes commitments to pursue transitional justice. Ethiopia's Ministry of Foreign Affairs struck back in a statement Tuesday, saying it rejects the U.S. allegation that all sides committed war crimes during the Tigray conflict. It said Blinken's statement, coming a week after the Secretary of State visited Ethiopia, unfairly proportions blame and is inflammatory and untimely. The government said it has just launched national consultations on a transitional justice policy. The ministry added that a report on human rights released by the U.S. State Department on Monday does not contain any information that wasn't included in a previous joint report done by the UN and Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission. In a separate report released by the UN last September, investigators had found evidence of crimes against humanity by the Ethiopian government, including using starvation as a weapon. The government rejected that report. Maya Msikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Burkina Faso's struggle against Islamic militants has raised security concerns in neighboring Ghana. Observers say illegal weapons are being smuggled into Ghana via the porous border. Senanu Todd reports from Paga, Ghana.
Paga, a Ghanaian community along the Ghana-Burkina Faso border, is closely linked economically to its Burkinabe neighbor, Dakola. Cross-border trade has been facilitated by ECOWAS trade agreements for West African states. But communities in Ghana are concerned that weapons from Burkina Faso, which is battling Islamic militants, are being smuggled into Ghana, creating a security threat. Awal Ahmed Kariama is the executive director of Rural Initiatives for Self-Empowerment, a human rights nonprofit operating along the borders.
There is a dedicated route that we know that this is where people pass. But beyond that, there are unapproved routes where, and you know that typical of border towns, smuggling generally is the bane of most border towns.
Analysts say Ghana's security is at risk. Mutar Rumumuni Mukhtar is the executive director for West Africa Center for Counter-Extremism.
Northern Ghana is very vulnerable. A bigger feature in terms of vulnerability is the existence of unresolved conflicts along chieftaincy lines, along ethnic lines, and marginalization along ethnic lines. These things make Northern Ghana very, very vulnerable for extremist or terrorist exploitation.
Ghana's army has assured citizens that it has the resources to thwart any possible insurgency. Military officials say through a joint security cooperation project called the Accra Initiative, they exchange intelligence with Burkina Faso on potential threats. Colonel Richard Mensah is Ghana's Army Chief Operations Officer for Special Operations Army Brigade.
We cooperate a lot. There's always exchange of information, exchange of intelligence and all that along the borders, not just among the military, among their customs, among the immigration, among the police.
Ghana, Burkina Faso, and more than two dozen other countries recently took part in 2 weeks of anti-terrorism combat training as part of the U.S. Special Operations Command Africa program called Flintlock 2023. Unlike its neighbors, Ghana has enjoyed relative stability, and hopes the program enhances its preparedness against terrorism.
Scenarios that are chosen for Flintlock mimic what has happened in the various countries, the modus operandi of the terrorists. So these are the scenarios that have been designed to train our troops on.
Ghana's authorities say they will continue to engage locals in intelligence sharing and counter-terrorism. Sena Anutot for VOA News, Daboya, Ghana.
In South Africa, analysts and the government say their attempt yesterday to shut the country down in protest against President Cyril Ramaphosa's administration failed. But the party that led countrywide demonstrations against ongoing power outages and high crime and unemployment disagrees. The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, insists its actions is the beginning of a revolution that will unseat the ruling African National Congress at the next polls next year. Darren Taylor reports.
The EFF had warned businesses and workplaces to remain closed yesterday. Messages on the party's social media platforms were clear: join us or face the consequences. The response to the EFF's threats and intimidation was a backlash from civil society, courts and security forces. It turned the party's shutdown into a letdown, as one government minister described it. Thousands of police and soldiers were deployed to cities and towns. Most workplaces and major roads were open. Minister in the presidency, Kumbudzo Ntshavheni, says EFF supporters did, however, engage in criminality yesterday.
And we told you it's going to be anarchy, there's going to be violence and all sorts of things. And we've been true to our words. The bombs that have been thrown in the homes of people, the intimidation, the burning of tires. The police have reported that they've removed more than 30,000 tires across the country. In Taung, there was a train that they attempted to attack, and the vandalism. So government was correct to make sure that we have maximum deployment. The shutdown was a monumental failure.
Police arrested almost 600 people on charges including assault and damage to critical infrastructure. EFF leader Julius Malema blames Agence Provocateurs for the violence. Most areas ignored the EFF's shutdown call. In Diepsloot, north of Johannesburg, community leader Loyiso Toyia said the EFF was not welcome.
We can't be supporting political parties who want to grandstand at the expense of our people, to shutting down our community. What about those who already have a legal job to feed their families, but someone wants to wake up and shut down our economy because of political egos? We cannot allow that as a community. In Diepsloot, it is business as usual.
One of the few places where it wasn't business as usual was the government union buildings in Pretoria.
Down with unemployment, down. Puma Ramaphosa, Puma. Puma Ramaphosa, Puma.
A few thousand EFF supporters called for Ramaphosa to resign because of what they called his corruption and partnership with white capitalism. At the end of the day, though, even some EFF officials told VOA they were disappointed in the support their attempted shutdown attracted. But when the TV cameras rolled, Malema called it the greatest protest in history and claimed credit for organizing peaceful demonstrations. He downplayed the relatively low numbers of people that backed the EFF's actions.
During apartheid, the struggle activities have been smaller than this. There's never been this big gatherings. The struggle has never been a festival of a lot of people.
In fact, shutdowns during apartheid were supported by millions. But independent political analyst Sandile Swana says it's incorrect to measure the success or failure of the EFF's protest in numbers.
One of the targets was to highlight the necessity for President Cyril Ramaphosa to remove himself as state president of South Africa. There was a proposed regime change. In response to that, South Africa then released 3,400 soldiers. If there was no realistic threat that Cyril Ramaphosa could be removed yesterday, the soldiers would have stayed in the barracks.
Swana says the government can dismiss the EFF-instigated demonstrations as much as it wants, but its actions show it's terrified of the undercurrent of dissatisfaction running through South Africa. And it's clear the ANC considers the EFF to be a credible threat to its near 30-year-old rule. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. Officials in Mozambique say the death toll from cholera after Cyclone Freddy has doubled in the last week to 16, and they fear it will continue to jump as thousands of displaced are living in overcrowded shelters. The UN Children Fund, UNICEF, says nearly 10,000 cholera cases have been reported in Mozambique, more than tripling since early February. Charles Mangwiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
The health director in Mozambique's Zambezia province, the area west hit by the cyclone, told State Radio Mozambique Monday night they are scrambling to cope with the rising numbers of cholera patients. Blighton Caetano said nearly 200 patients were being treated for the bacterial disease in the provincial capital, Kilimani, where 50,000 people are crowded into temporary shelters. He says they have recruited and hired 116 health technicians, including doctors, nurses, service agents and drivers, to cope with the demand in Kilimani City. Caetano says they are working with two cholera treatment centers and are preparing to open a third. In a media statement Monday, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, said millions of children were at risk in the aftermath of the record cyclone. Cyclone Freddy killed hundreds in Madagascar, Malawi and Mozambique since first making landfall in February and displaced hundreds of thousands. Malawi was already suffering a record cholera outbreak with nearly 1,700 deaths in the past year from the diarrheal disease spread by dirty water, most of them children. UNICEF's statement notes that Mozambique has 2 million people in need of food and other aid in the country's northern region. UNICEF said the situation for children is set to worsen if aid doesn't arrive quickly, saying malnutrition increases the risk from diseases like cholera. It said as of March 18, there were nearly 10,000 cholera cases reported in 35 districts in Mozambique, more than tripling since early February. UNICEF head of office in Zambezia province, Michael Chimeza, told Radio Mozambique Tuesday they provided 10,000 water purification bottles and nearly 5,000 hygiene kits. He says they will increase these numbers even more with the trucks of supplies that are arriving in few days. Chimeza says they made this delivery now to support the government response and try to stop the cholera outbreak. UNICEF is calling for $155 million to respond to the impacts of the flooding and cholera on children and families. Cyclone Freddy made landfall twice in Mozambique and is believed to be the longest-lasting such tropical storm to hit Southern Africa in decades. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Gay rights activists in Namibia are decrying a Supreme Court decision that will effectively deny citizenship to a child born through surrogacy to a same-sex couple in South Africa. The case has ignited public debate in Namibia on what constitutes a family. Vita Angula reports from Windhoek, Namibia.
The ruling on Monday by the Supreme Court of Namibia overturned a lower court's decision that ordered the government to process a gay couple citizenship application for their child. The High Court ruled last year that the Minister of Home Affairs and Immigration must process the application within 30 days. However, the Minister of Home Affairs at the time, Frans Kapofi, appealed the judgment. He argued that the couple, Philip Lul, a Namibian citizen, and Guillermo Delgado, a Mexican national, had not proven that they were the actual parents of the child by submitting DNA results. LGBTQ activist Linda Bauman told VOA the judgment of the Supreme Court is a major setback for Namibia's LGBTQ community.
The family and broadly us in the movement find it as 10 steps back. We also know that homophobia, biphobia and transphobia will be experienced when the family goes back to home affairs, because now you have to go back to the person that you've challenged in the court We also know the frustration of harassment could occur, because that's a common practice that happens against us when we try and push or advance our rights in this country.
A full bench of Supreme Court judges agreed that Lul and Delgado did not satisfy the requirements of the Citizenship Act in their application. The Supreme Court held that the minister was correct in not granting the minor child citizenship by descent. Speaking to journalists outside the Supreme Court, the lawyer for the two men, Uno Kachipuka, said the judges relied on technicalities when ruling on the appeal and did not consider the merits of the case. She said the couple would now have to go back to Home Affairs Ministry to register the birth of the child as a Namibian, and said in all likelihood the registration will not be accepted. The child was born in South Africa.
All they've done is push the can or kick the can down the road to live to, I don't know, consider these things in another day. But in my opinion, it's very unfortunate and not the sort of thing we expect to see from our Supreme Court. This was the time to deal with the merits, and they chose not to. For a second time, they chose not to.
Kapofi, the former Minister of Home Affairs, welcomed the judgment. He said the couple failed to prove that they were the fathers of the child by submitting DNA evidence to that effect. The Supreme Court of Namibia heard other cases this month involving homosexuality. In one, a South African citizen who married a Namibian man in South Africa is asking to be granted citizenship by domicile. In another, a Namibian man is asking for the repeal of the country's sodomy law, arguing that it is an invasion of privacy and discriminatory to people in homosexual relationships. LGBTQ rights have divided public opinion in a country where the majority of the population identifies as Christians and homosexuality is still regarded as taboo and abnormal. Vitalio Angula for VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
French medical aid group Doctors Without Borders has launched the first human papillomavirus HPV vaccination drive for schoolgirls in Malawi. The aim is to reduce cervical cancer in Malawi, which has the world's second highest death rate from the disease. Lameka Masina reports from Machinga District in Malawi.
Malawi rolled out its national human papillomavirus vaccination campaign in 2019, targeting 1.5 million girls aged 9 to 14 to prevent cervical cancer. But the COVID pandemic quickly disrupted the HPV vaccine drive with shifting medical priorities and social distancing. Medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, known by its French abbreviation MSF, this year launched a campaign to boost the low vaccine uptake by targeting girls at school. Robert Welemu is medical coordinator for Doctors Without Borders in Malawi.
It's easier to find this age group in schools than in a community. And at school, we have the Minister of Education, which works hand in hand with the Minister of Health. And it's easier to explain or to advocate, to mobilize these children to get to understand what is an HPV and how can they prevent it, mostly in line of a vaccine.
MSF says since January, they vaccinated about 65,000 girls in 300 schools. MSF says Malawi has the world's second largest death rate from the disease, seven times the global average, with thousands dying every year. Before getting vaccinated, girls are also taught about the disease. Pege Nkwezalamba is a health surveillance assistant in Malawi's Machinga District.
Health education has helped us to prepare the girls for the vaccine and to make them decide what to do on their own. As such, a lot of girls between 9 and 14 years of age volunteered to get the jabs. Some were even asking us to vaccinate them before they get consent from their parents.
Malawi in 2020 destroyed 20,000 expired doses of COVID-19 vaccines because of low uptake over myths and misunderstandings. The HPV vaccine faced the same resistance as some parents refused consent, says Nkwezalamba.
Their fear was that they suspected that we were vaccinating their children to make them infertile. Some suspected that we want to vaccinate their children against COVID-19 and that we have just changed the appearance of COVID-19 doses.
Malawi health officials say meetings with village chiefs and parents helped debunk those myths, and the vaccination rate has soured in the MSF drive. Alfred Piri is the chief preventive health officer for Machinga District.
We wish this support can be normalized also, so that MSA can support us each and every time when we need to have this vaccination on the HPV.
MSF says if there are no more disruptions, they'll keep up vaccinations to try to bring down Malawi's high death rate and maybe even one day stop cervical cancer. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Machinga District, Malawi.
The Basketball Africa League Sahara Conference is wrapping up, so we are joined now in studio by my colleague, Sane Young. Sane, great to have you, Sane.
Sporty greetings, Douglas. Great to be back on Africa News tonight.
Thank you. Now, let's take a look at the standings, Sane.
Well, heading into Tuesday's games, Douglas, at the Dakar Arena in Senegal, Abidjan Basketball Club, also known as the ABC Fighters from Ivory Coast, they topped the table with 3 wins and 1 loss. Defending BAL champion U.S. Monastir from Tunisia, they also have 3 wins and 1 loss. They're in second position. And Rwanda Energy Group, they're in third position with 3 wins and 2 losses. Those three teams are through to the BAL playoffs in May in Kigali, Rwanda. The interesting position is number 4. That's still up for grabs, Douglas. And it's going to be either AS Douan, that's the local team from Dakar, Senegal, or Stade Malien. And if we take a look at Tuesday's games, Stade Malien of Mali is playing the ABC Fighters, and that will be followed by a game between AS Douan and Monastir. So that fourth position is the one still to be determined, Douglas.
So in other words, Sane, what are the implications of the games that are being played today?
Well, if AS Douan and Stade Malien both win their games today, AS Douan would go through to the playoffs based on having defeated Stade Malien in an earlier game.
The Sahara Conference is almost over, Sane. Now, what are you looking forward to watch in the Nile Conference?
Well, I'm looking forward to checking out one of the teams from your country, Douglas, Uganda.
Yes.
City Oilers. I don't know a lot about them, but I know they're based in Kampala, and they'll be making their debut in the Basketball Africa League. The Cape Town Tigers, they have returned to play in the BAL, and they have recruited Zaire Wade. He is the son of Dwayne Wade, the former NBA star. And so I think Zaire is going to attract a lot of attention. So those are two teams I'm looking forward to seeing. Another team making its debut in the Nile Conference, Al Ahly from Egypt. So some interesting teams that we'll be watching in Cairo, Egypt, for the Nile Conference.
And the Rwanda team, of course, will have home advantage.
Good point. Good point, Douglas. They know that BK Arena in Kigali very well. And I expect, President Kagame will show his support for Rwanda Energy Group and come out and watch that team play, since his country will once again be hosting the BAL playoffs and final. And I think that is really kind of an endorsement by the BAL of what Rwanda has done on the sporting front.
Indeed, Kagame is a very big sports fan, so I'm not surprised.
And if we just look back a few days, Douglas, they hosted the FIFA Congress at the same BK Arena.
And I saw him play.
So, yes, he is a big sports fan, and I think he'll be turning up to watch that the playoffs come May.
Thanks very much, Sane. We'll keep watch. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Douglas Ibuga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbu Yebro, and our engineer tonight, Adrius Riggs, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.